When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the White Towel Podcast, where we discuss all things Vancouver Canucks. I'm Paul Chapman, joined by Ed Willis. We will get to that in a second. I'd just like to tell you to subscribe to the White Towel through Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating. You get our wonderful news here every week. And we're going to talk a little bit about the draft lottery. We'll put the season under the microscope a little bit, look at the front office, free agents, what we can expect for next year with Ed in a minute. But I did want to help out our good friends over at BC Children's Hospital. So you can join Vancouver Canuck and Jean's Day Ambassador Brock Besser in supporting BC Children's Hospital if you buy a button and Jean up in support of BC's kids on Thursday, May 2nd. More at jeansday.ca. And Ed, as we talk about the season, I'm not sure if Victor Soderstrom will be at Jean's Day next year for the Vancouver Canucks, but that is the guy, the defenseman, obviously Swedish, who's ranked as the number 10 player in the draft. I don't know what people were expecting yesterday. I know it was only a 5% chance. Does it really matter that the Canucks dropped from 9 to 10? Can they still get a good player here? It would have been a stroke of genius to move up and get Quinn Hughes' brother. I know that. But honestly, isn't this about right?
Yeah, it's funny. I took yesterday off because one of the reasons was we had our 38th annual playoff draft. Started when we were young idiots, and now we're old idiots. But it's still it's a great night, which also explains my whiskey voice this morning. I felt guilty. I was thinking, you know, what if they land the number one spot, and I don't have anything in the paper tomorrow. What if that happens?
That's online.
That's a really
or
bad
at the
luck.
Province.com.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Do we have an online presence? He's like, yeah, I've been missing that over the years. And then I thought about it for about 15 seconds, and then I just kind of started to laugh. Yeah, like the Canucks are going to win this thing too. And then I watched it unfold, and predictably they actually moved down one. So it's funny. I was listening to Shane Malloy, who's got a scouting show on the way up, and he was talking about the tiers in the draft, and it's basically a two-man draft at the top, Capo and Jack Hughes. And then he says, there's another group of about six or seven, and then it drops off after that, and so I'm doing the math. Okay, right. The Canucks will have the first pick of the third tier.
Yeah.
That is awesome. No, there's some interesting players there, and there's always a surprise in the first round. So I think that somebody will fall to them. They're not going to fall like from Bowen Byram is going to be long gone. But there's some interesting kids on that U.S. development team. The Swedish defenseman you talked about, a couple of Western leaguers. So, you know, they're going to probably come out of this with a real, well, not probably, they will come out of this with a decent prospect.
Well, I think that's it, though. I mean, if you go back to Pedersen's draft, people at that time were saying it was a two-person draft and then there was a drop-off.
That's right.
And you look at, you know, I think universally people would take Pedersen first.
And that pick wasn't universally embraced either, like,
no.
Especially when Elias showed up with his manly physique at the draft. This is our first rounder, and
yeah.
It's kind of rewritten that story.
The one thing I will say, though, is I think that, I mean, as we talk about odds, you know, it's so amplified to try and find a franchise player at 10 even versus 5.
Yeah.
And if you look back over the last, I think people were showing like the last 10, 12 drafts, if you look at the 10th pick overall, yeah, there's some very good players in there. I don't think that there's a franchise changer. Like if you're looking for another piece Like, if you're looking for another, I hate to put Hughes in this category. Everyone is, though, after what we've seen, we can talk about that. But if you're looking for a Pettersson at 10, I don't know that you find it. But that is where you found Bo Horvat. You got Besser certainly into the 20s. So, I mean, not all is lost, but it would be exceptional luck, would it not?
Very, very rarely. Timo Salani went 10th to the Winnipeg Jets in 1988, I can tell you that. I've studied the draft. I haven't as much recently, but from about 95 to 2010, I looked at it. And there is a marked difference between picking in the top five and picking 5 to 10. Top five, you basically have an 80% chance of landing an impact player. 5 to 10, it drops off. I think it's in the 67% range in there. So they should get a piece. Whether or not it'll be the piece is doubtful. But, you know, it was funny. I was thinking about this, you know, thinking about, like, really, really good teams, even Stanley Cup winners, they kind of have this progression where, you know, they accumulate elite picks in the top five, and then they kind of land that one that nobody's expecting. And the most obvious example of that is the New York Islanders assembled their core with Denny Podvan and Trotsche and Gillies, and, you know, they'd kind of made a move forward, and then they landed Mike Boston. I can't remember exactly where he went, but it was around 15. And that's what put them over the top. And that there have been other examples of that over the years. So, I mean, if they, you know, they've kind of got this group together. And let's just say Matthew Baldy, the kid from the development team, falls in that everybody loves. And he's risen a little bit. But he at the start of the season, there was some questions about him. Say they get him. Or they get the Cole Caulfield kid, who's like 5'1". But he's a scoring machine, you know. You add him to the nucleus, now all of a sudden you start thinking, boy, geez, they really have something here.
You're right. You're so right about that. If people will point to, you know, the LA Kings or the Chicago Blackhawks and how they became Stanley Cup winners because of the draft, and certainly, yeah, if you look at Kane and Taves, high picks came close together. But if you don't get Seabrook or Keith, wasn't even in the first round. If you don't get those pieces, along with all those other compliments, and I guess that's where it's down to Jim Benning as a super scout, as everyone keeps telling us, that it is finding those with a later first round pick, with second round picks, get the third or fourth, or even a bigger surprise in there. Let me ask you this though, and I think that because we want fireworks, 10 is probably almost the worst place the Canucks could land, because if they get 5 or 4, you're kind of thinking, well, does he make a big splash and move up for one? There's no way that I don't think to move up from 10 to not even to 1 or 2, to move up from anywhere from 10 to 5, they don't have the pieces to do that, do they? Because people will be asking for one of their core players.
Exactly. Then the cost would be prohibitive. I think with their progression now, they hang on to the pick, take him, hang on to the second round pick, take him. It's unfortunate this has happened with the draft in Vancouver, because I know the organization's goal was to make a big splash. You know, to have that kind of, you know, electric moment where we have a deal to announce and the place goes crazy, or they draft Bowen Byram, you know, the local kid, or the kid with ties at least. I remember the draft in Ottawa, and it was an interesting enough draft, but like this is the years where the Senators were good. And they announced they make this trade, and, you know, I can't remember who it was with, but they moved up in the first round. They take Erik Karlsson. And that was a really cool moment. So, you know, I think in a perfect world, the Canucks would like to have that. But it just doesn't seem to be in the cards for them this year.
Well, you never know. With a 10th pick,
Paul, you never know.
No, Gary Bettman could stroll to the microphone and say, ladies and gentlemen, Francesco Aquilini has let me know we have a deal. When you're leaving the arena, there will be Lyft and Uber there available for you to take. I mean, that could happen. You could still make a splash. But while we've been talking about Benning and drafts and trades and free agency and everything else, I know we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, but as we assess the season now, you know, we had a lot of free agent signings. How do you think that played out, for one? And two, you know, trades weren't maybe what people desired, but how do you assess a general manager's performance from the year, or the front office as a whole?
probably on balance, and again, with the Canucks, you're always stuck with this question, you know, compared to their own ineptitude or compared to the rest of the NHL. But I think top to bottom, when you look at the moves, I think Benning probably grades out quite positively this year. The free agents are kind of, you know, they are what they are.
It is what it is.
Yeah, thank you. I was more grammatically correct. However, they were looking for depth players. They were looking for character veterans, yada, yada, yada. You know, we can circle back to that. But I look at, you know, the two trades he made, or two of the trades he made. The Josh Levo trade looks like at least a stand-up double for the organization. And the same with Tanner Pearson. These guys all of a sudden emerge as really key pieces in the puzzle moving forward because, you know, Benning said it's his goal to land a top six forward in free agency this year. But if Levo and Pearson are both 20 goal scorers, and then you look at the three young building blocks they have, and then you add an impactful top six forward, now all of a sudden, again, we're kind of in that, geez, have they got something here? So those are good deals. Then you add Quinn Hughes into the mix. I think, you know, that's a home run for the organization. Jet Wu had a good year. Tyler Madden had a good year. So on balance, I know, you know, it wasn't really reflective in the standings, but even then they improved by, was it 9 points, 8 or 9 points this year over last. So
again, yeah, but how many of those came at the end, which ruined their draft lottery?
again, it's not marked against the strictest standard, yeah. But by and large, taken in isolation this year, I think Benning gets a passing grade.
So, I see this a lot where the franchise is. I see a real split, and hear a real split, both from feedback to us, social media, whether you put any stock in talk radio. Where there are people who say, yeah, this was a good season. This was a step forward. Pettersson was better than we thought he'd be. Markstrom certainly found his feet. You know, you introduce Quinn Hughes. Looks like he's ready right out of the box next year. And then I see other people going, look, you missed the playoffs again. 4 years in a row. You know, and again, this is the misfortune of the draft lottery is if you end up with the first or second, you're hoping maybe a guy can step in and right away. You know, I would suggest, as we've already kind of covered, whoever they choose is probably at least two seasons away, at least. So, you know, where do you sit on this? Yes, you can say that this season, if you go back to September, is probably a success, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, there's no more moral victories. Is that this team has to make the playoff step next year?
It depends on how wide the lens is. You look at that, and if you look over the last 4 years, then this is kind of just more of the same, right? You know, maybe a few more happy stories to talk about. But when you're judging the Benning administration, I think you have to look at the totality of the last 4 years and ask, why isn't this organization farther ahead? And why have they diddled around with so many middle-of-the-road free agents that haven't had any effect on the bottom line? And why is there still so much clutter on both the NHL roster and the reserve list? I think all those points are completely valid. Now, where am I going with this?
I think where you're going with it is a stereotypical half glass of water is there.
Yeah.
And which side do you see on it?
No, okay, so there's that, and I thought it was really instructive. You know, both Benning and Travis Green contorted themselves into knots at that last presser to avoid that we think we are ready to challenge for a playoff spot, or I think we are going to be a playoff team in 2 years. There was this vague, we're looking to make another step, we're looking to improve ourselves. I'm not sure if that's what people want to hear. Irrespective of that, next year, I just think this team has to be judged by wins and losses next year. I've been saying it probably for about 3 or 4 years. The clock starts ticking on this team January 1st, 2020. And that'll be about the midway point in this next season. But I just don't think they can sell another. Well, I know we didn't make the playoffs, but
we were 5 points better.
And look at this guy we brought up from the American colleges who looks like he might be a play. And look at the year this guy had in junior. And I just don't think that washes anymore. And I thought it was a little tone deaf of both Green and Benning to try and spin that story. I understand why they did it, but to me, they had to come out with something just a little more powerful and a little more direct in what they expect from their team next year.
Yeah, and I think that that's it. You can be afraid of having your words shoved down your throat, because we all know that this time next year, we could well be hearing, if it wasn't for all the injuries, we'd be a playoff team, right? Which is, I mean, we hear that over and over and over again. Yet they've actually been pretty good in not losing, like, Edler, obviously, but that's almost a given. But they haven't lost. Like, they haven't, they didn't lose a star this year for an extended period of time. I mean, Pettersson obviously missed a few games early on, but I think it's more the grind and the toll overall and their lack of depth to fill those spots than, you know, if your starting goalie goes down and is out for the year, that's a little bit tougher to deal with. But again, for purposes of a season end, we've kicked this around. Blue line, top six, scoring wingers to play with Horvat. What's your number one priority that he has to solve?
Well, it's to do with the cost, right?
Yeah. Obviously,
I just the high end free agent defensemen are starting with Carlson, going to Tyler Myers, going to Jake Gardner. They're just too risky for me for what it's going to cost to bring them in, and you know, for what the Canucks have under contract, and this is assuming, of course, they sign Edler, and I am sure that that's going to get done. I don't see where the trade off is worth the risk. So on that basis, for me, the number one priority should be a top six winger. And we've talked about this before, that, you know, the highest end is Artemi Panarin, and he's kind of in a class by himself. And then there's a group with Jeff Skinner. Depending on how you view Anders Lee, and you, boy, the numbers suggest he is elite, or Matt Duchene. And then there's another group where you might be looking at a Ryan Zingle, or you might be looking at Michael Ferland, whose name has been attached with the Canucks in the past. So I'm not sure where it wouldn't surprise me at all if they're kind of in that Ferland Zingle camp, something you could get $5 to $6 million, you know, in a 5-year deal. I don't think they're, you know, it's not going to be a max deal, and it's not going to be something that, you know, locks them in. So I think that's where they're going with this. And then the other intriguing development for Canucks fans is the trade front. Because if Benning says he wants to go out and get a defenseman, well, the only way to do that is with a trade. And their most marketable piece is Jake Virtanen. Again, you connect the dots there, and that's what I come up with, at least.
You realize that we feel we're shouting into the wind sometimes here, but someone is going to take, like, 8 words that you just said and put them out on Twitter. Ed Willis is okay with the Canucks blue line as it is.
Well, no, it's a matter of fact. It did come out.
I know,
and I had to explain the context. And it's
at least someone's listening.
well, that was it too, which is also what happened last time. But however, we need not revisit that. No, and that's what I say. I don't think you can take these things out of isolation and say, okay, here's the need. How are they going to fill it? Well, it's not that easy. It's what's the cost of filling it, and what's available, and what are the laws of supply and demand, and all these other factors, not the least of which are what are the other 30 teams in the NHL going to do. So again, really interesting offseason for the Canucks. And the other aspect of this is Jim Benning has 1 year left on his contract. Are they going to extend him? Are they going to let him go through the year? Is, you know, basically a lame duck GM? It's, you know, That's a pretty big one.
I would be shocked if they did either, and I think it's going to be something that would come mid-season, depending on how the team gets off to a start, don't you think?
Yeah, it could be. It could be.
I don't think Benning has a ton of
options. Also depends on, you know, the ownership's vision for what this organization is going to look like. And again,
what
at the risk of repeating ourselves, that is an inexact science. Yeah, to me, you know, well, let's get into that, because to me, that might be the biggest question. It's not like who they're going to draft at 10 and how is Cole Lynn developing. It's what is this organization going to look like? Who is going to head it up? Who are going to be the key decision makers? Are they committed to this Benning-Weisbrod nexus at the top of the hockey operations, or do they go out and get that hockey overlord and kind of return to the structure that they had with Trevor Linden, which is kind of the structure favored by most of the NHL now, where you have like the 3 top executives at the top of your hockey department, and then you have a lot more resources in player development than the Canucks have invested. To me, this organization is crying out for a massive renovation, and that's something I would like to see. I just, yeah, when you're talking about this brave new world and this new era of Canucks, and we're going to do things differently, and then you look at the way the organization is structured, it just doesn't add up.
So I know, and I know Patrick Johnson has something planned for later in the week in terms of, and I know you've written about it before, about the front office and, you know, vacancies not filled, whether it's scouting, president, assistant to the special advisor, council, whatever. And again, as you talked about, when we saw it in Toronto in particular, it's laughable,
yeah,
the amount of guys that
it's
they
awesome.
Had.
Yeah.
You know, like, go back to Cliff Flagg. I think Pat Quinn still has an honorary role in their front office. Obviously, Lamoriello moved on, but they had so many hockey brains in there. For the Canucks to let this happen, has it been a power-based vacuum in there that decision-makers want more power, or has it been a financial thing that they didn't want to replace at a cost?
I think it's a little of both. And, you know, it's kind of hard to know for sure, because they're not exactly an open book about these things. But I have to believe the way things are structured now is the way ownership wants it and likes it. And there is now a direct pipeline between Francesco Aquilini and Jim Benning. And that really wasn't the case when Trevor Linden was there. Trevor referred to himself as, I can't use the colorful colloquialism. Well, no, I can. What the hell? It's referred to himself as the shit screen for the organization. And now that's removed. So now it's now.
Was that on his business card?
This is the show. Why did I say that? I can just see that one coming back. However, no, but I think it's I think that was revealing.
And absolutely.
Now, and now, so but that's it. So now you know you've lost this position. I assume they're still paying his salary, but you've lost this position. You've got, you know, Benning and Weisbrot seem to be happy with it. They really only answer to ownership. They're running the show. They're the ones that make the decisions. I thought it was also interesting the way Doug Jarvis' role evolved. It was funny. I went back over it, and it was probably two lines in a press release over the summer that he was going to take on this new role as the senior advisor consultant dude who, you know, rolls around, and he's kind of, so he's the guy. I think he has a fair bit of, I know he has a fair bit of influence with Benning, as a matter of fact. And I wonder about Stan Smeal's role going forward. So again, lots of questions about the organization and the way it's structured, who will make the decisions, et cetera.
I think that's huge, personally. And you know, it's this whole thing, do you wait to fail again? But with this being such a big offseason, with having money to spend and with having, I mean, we're not looking for depth players anymore. As we've talked about, you're looking for an impact defenseman. You're looking for a top six forward. Those are very big organizational decisions that you need to complement the stars that you, the young stars that you've got under contract now at a, you know, a decent rate. So these are massive decisions. I mean, is it clear to say that probably since that 2011 Cup team, this is the biggest offseason this team has had?
Yeah, no, maybe. I mean, I'm not sure, because like to me, they've done a lot of the heavy lifting, and that presupposes they're ready to win. And I think they're ready to compete for a playoff spot, and if they get these moves right and the world unfolds in the perfect Vancouver, according to the perfect Canucks script, then it's conceivable they might make the playoffs. Not probable, but it's conceivable. You could make that case. So when I think of the table stakes, going back, you know, when they had these, you know, two Hall of Fame players, the Sedins, and they had a Hall of Fame goalie, and they had other pieces, and the question was, how can we extend this through 12, 13, 14, and then, you know, the bottom fell out, and we know what happened next. So I think it's important. I don't see them taking a step backwards. To you, do you see this kind of all going wrong? Unless there's some crazier injury bug, but I don't see this kind of coming off the rails. I think the question is, do they improve a little bit or do they improve a lot?
I, you know, personally, you're the expert, not me, but I do look at this and I go, no, I see them, when you look at their young players, I see them taking a step forward. But at the same time, I mean, if Markstrom regresses and Demko or gets like a serious injury and proves himself not ready, While everyone's like enamored with Quinn Hughes, there's a defensive element to his game at his size that he's going to have to learn. Obviously, you know, the stuff about the power play, all that stuff can be tiresome when you get into it. Look, he's a great offensive player. We saw Pettersson hit a wall the last 20 games of the season,
sure,
regardless of what he says. So, you know, I think all things trend forward, but that's the way this team has been going, even if they've been baby steps. And I don't think it would be that unnatural to have, if not a hiccup, maybe a little bit of stagnation before you take another step. But I don't think that's acceptable to the fans. Certainly won't be to the media, because if they're not, it's like firmly entrenched in a playoff position next year, I think there have to be job shed. And then you start going down to Travis Green and is he the right guy, mm-hmm, and on. But, you know, let's get into the talk about some of the players. And you know, Vertanen's the interesting one. And I did laugh yesterday prior to them getting the 10th pick, because it's the old, as everyone jokes about Ballard Raymond in a second. You know, now it's Vertanen is this fantastic prospect that people would definitely, you know, the New Jersey Devils would be stupid not to take, you know, swap, give him the 10th pick, give him Vertanen and maybe throw on you a Levy in a second and that'll get you up to first. It won't, right? I mean, it just won't. And this is the thing for Jake Vertanen. You saw him a lot this year. I think the frustrating thing with him is you see games, you see plays where you go, he could be an elite player, but then he won't score for 11 games,
mm-hmm,
and you won't notice him. So you might, there's probably still enough value there to package with something else to get a defenseman. But if not, what's Jake Vertanen in the NHL? Like, what is he? Can he be an impact top six power forward?
It is so hard to watch him over the course of a season, because you sit there, and the key word there you mentioned is it's frustrating. It's frustrating to watch. It's frustrating for the fans. It's frustrating for his teammates, for what he could be, because he has every conceivable tool to be an impact player in the NHL. It's just that kind of shift in, shift out consistency, the commitment. I looked this up. He has had two fights in his career. For the way he plays, I'm like, this isn't to open up a debate over the place of fighting in the game, but the way he should be playing, he should have a lot more than two fights. 3-4 times a year, that's all you have to do, right? He kind of teases at this role of being an agitator, teases at this role of being a physical player, teases at being a scorer. Who knows? You know, the light might come on for him one day. There's certainly been other players who matured at that 23, 24, 25 age group that Jake's getting into now. It's just they need him so badly to be that guy. I mean, if he was the guy, he was the 6th overall pick in the draft, for pity's sake. That's supposed to be an impact player. If he was that guy, if he was a 25-goal power forward, it completely changes the equation for the Canucks. And I wrote about this, too. You know, you forget about him and you forget about Olli Juolevi, and Jake's 23 and Juolevi just turned 21. 6th and 5th overall draft picks, right? Those should be impact players. If they're on schedule, if they're where about they should be, given where they were drafted, then the whole conversation about this team changes. And Juolevi is still, I mean, he's an interesting one. Like I said, he's still only 21, coming off knee surgery at a position the Canucks really, really need some help and some depth. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just saying it's another one of these imponderables about this team, and there's just so frickin' many of them.
So, but
once
you
get past those three foundational, and I think you can add goaltending
but
to the
mix
now.
That's where I find it fascinating. I mean, so far in this podcast, you've said that their most valuable chip to move is Vertanen, but you've also said they desperately need him to step up and play for them. And I think that's the dilemma for him. And it, historically, the NHL is so different than it was in the 80s. But those of us who've been around look at it and go, well, is he Cam Neely?
Yep.
And you give up on him too soon and he's going to be an elite player somewhere else. Or is he Jim Sanlak? You hang on to him for so long, hoping that you see that promise and it never comes. And I think that's the dilemma that the Canucks are with, and this is where it's going to take some steel balls for Jim Benning. If he needs that defenseman and there's someone willing to take Vertanen in order to do that, then that's a deal he has to make, because I think the kid's had enough chances here, and the fact that he probably needs another setup in order to fulfill that promise, who knows, but maturity is a funny thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the fact is, I think when Neely was traded, he was 21. He had drafted as an 18-year-old. He had 3 years here, and then he was traded. Jake's 23. He was taken in the 2014 draft. This is, you know, this is 5 years on now. I just don't think they can afford to be patient with him anymore. Yeah. And if there is a deal available, and it'll probably be Vertanen plus for the defenseman they want. And we're not talking about, you know, we're not talking about a top four guy. I mean, it would be great if we are. I think we're just looking at an upgrade, like a really solid number five guy who can move up to number four in injuries or on a certain night or with certain matchups. I just think, I think that's a deal they have to make. And if Jake turns out, you know, if the light goes on and he does develop into that guy, more power to him. God bless him. But I just think where this organization is now, I'm just not sure if they can invest any more time in waiting for him and waiting for that light to go on.
So I know we're running a little short on time, but we got a lot to cover. So I wanted to rattle through some players quickly. Quinn Hughes, now, you know, we saw a very limited window, but obviously people are excited about what they saw. Your thoughts on what he can bring next year?
It's honestly, I wasn't surprised. That's about what I envisioned. I think he starts next year as one of the Calder Trophy favorites. He'll be in a group of probably 4 to 5 guys at the start of the year, at least. I think we've talked about it in the past. I mean, his skating is self-evident. The skill level is self-evident. But what impresses me the most about him is just his awareness, his hockey sense, and the fact that he was born into this thing, that he's been around the game at an elite level since he was 10, 11 years old. So he will figure it out. He, you know, there's a physical limitation there. Sure, great, whatever. He'll figure out a way to play around that. And he'll be impactful, and I am so looking forward to watching that power play next season.
I know that you wrote this, so certainly you can go and find it at theprovince.com, vancouversun.com, or, you know, as Ed was referencing early, going request a back copy of, I think it was Tuesday's paper, whatever it was, you wrote about Brock Besser. We do have a number still for back issues. I think if people are interested, go to your local library. But Besser is a guy who, I think, as you termed so aptly, we know he's a very good player. Can he be great? And I think when going back to his debut at the end of the season, people were like, holy cow, did you see his shot? And then his first year, certainly the first half of his first year, I mean, going to his first All-Star game, being the MVP, obviously that injury affected him. But as you said, the difference between very good and being great. What is Brock Besser, and what do you expect from him next year?
Yeah, he's a kid I'd bet on because, again, I like his makeup and I like his approach to the game, and he's smart and he is committed. But you know, adding that extra stride to your skating to improve, and that takes so much work. Like when you're at a high level to begin with, and just to ratchet it up that other 5 to 8%. But that's really what we're talking about. I think it's pretty clear he's a 30 goal scorer. I think we can say that, you know, just based on the body of evidence we've seen so far. But can he be that? You know, a 40 goal scorer in the NHL is elite. And he's going to get a chance playing with Patterson, and he's going to get a chance on the power play. And you just think of what the impact of the bottom line would be for a guy like Patterson, a guy like Besser, with Hughes running the show on the power play. It finished off on a high note over the last, I think it was the last 10 games. It caught fire. But there were stretches of this season where they were getting nothing out of their power play. And when you're getting nothing out of your power play, that means you're getting nothing out of your top guys, and you can't win that way. So, again, it's just one of those things, you know, can he find a way? Can he maybe get a little tougher in front of the net and get a couple of the greasy goals? Can he get 2 or 3 goals off deflections? Can he get, you know, add 3 or 4 goals on the power play? There's your kind of 8 to 10 goals right there, and that really moves him up to that elite status in the NHL. Now the question is, he's got a contract coming, so do you pay for that on that based on that projection, or do you pay? That's another one of the really interesting storylines to this offseason.
Absolutely, and then of course we have to talk about Elias Pettersson. Apologies to Jordan Binnington. I think he's still probably going to win the Calder, even though he tailed off probably quite harshly. And people who say that the media are too negative in this town, first of all, I don't know how that's possible when you've been the worst team in hockey over 4 years. But secondly, I don't want to say Pettersson got a free ride, because I think he earned some space. But I was a little surprised there almost wasn't more furor around him, so-called wearing down or hitting the wall, because he was not the same kind of player, obviously, in the last 20 games that we'd seen in the
season. I don't think it was 20 games. And I go back and I think we've talked about
this on that podcast. It was like two goals in the last 20
podcast. Right? No, I understand that. But I went on that road trip to California through March. No, I'm sorry. It was
it was late March.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was back in April. So I'm sorry. Let me retract that. I think that's valid. No, I was going to say was he wasn't scoring then, but I was still impressed with his all-around game, because he goes into Anaheim, he goes into LA, and he goes into San Jose, and I think he had points in those games. He actually had a goal, but when I thought of him, going into Anaheim and he's playing against Getzlaff, and then the next night he's in LA and he's playing against Kopitar, and then the next night against San Jose, and he's still driving the play and still competing. Now, absolutely, I think from mid-March on, something happened there. He just didn't have the energy. He just didn't have the same kind of, physical presence that he had early on. But as you said, he built up an awful lot of goodwill over those first 40, 50 games. And, considering 20-year-old kid, considering his first year in the NHL, considering that he's in uncharted territories on so many different levels, whether it's the amount of game, whether it's the level of competition, whether it's the expectation, or the simple fact that he's drawing the top matchups every night, I agree, probably got a bit of a pass, but right. This market is also so desperate for, I don't think we needed to dissect it that harshly.
Yeah, no, I think, when people do say the media here is negative, I do look at it and say they've actually been pretty positive when they see guys like Besser and Pettersson.
I've given that a lot of thought. Can we end on this? It isn't the media that's negative, it's Twitter.
Well, for sure, absolutely.
And people conflate the two, and they're two entirely different things. The media here is, I'm sorry, it's, first of all, it's like, we all know what's happened to the media in general. It's been cut to the bone, so there's not that many voices. And there's a couple of strong ones, but that's all they are, and they're in isolation. To me, people see, again, the shitstorms that arise on Twitter, and they think that's like part of the deal here. That's part of the media thing, and it isn't. It's something out there. It's background noise. It can be entertaining. It can be infuriating. It can be a lot of things. I'm just not sure how relevant it is in the big picture.
No, I think more, though, I think people in this market have been, and yes, there's snarky, and a lot of it is fed by social media, and that's interactions with the real media, if you want to call them that. I do think people will give credit when credit's due them. When the Gabranson deal came along, I think people generally have gone, yeah, well done. That was a good move by Benning.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't given away anything stupid. People will quibble about the number of draft picks, right? But I think when something here warrants some praise, I think it happens. And certainly with the players on it, that's kind of where I was going with Pettersson. He certainly earned it. But I think in other markets and in other sports, you would have seen a guy like, if Aaron Judge goes the last 30 games of a season and he's almost trying too hard because he's gripping, New York media is going to be all over that. And I just don't think that happened here. A couple of things before we finish up. One, we've acknowledged that we think that the Canucks are going to be players in free agency and the draft. We know they have a couple of prospects coming. We also know they have a ton of guys who are out of contract. How much change do you see on this team next year? Like, do you see six new players? Do you see four? Do you see eight?
Well,
and I know most of that is around the fringe, but there's a number of options here for Bennett.
No, it's a great question, and it's really hard to quantify. Because like I said earlier, there's just so much clutter there. And when you start like sketching out a depth chart, and I did it just as an exercise, the team I would like to see. And then I start looking at who this doesn't account for, and it's names like Brandon Sutter. It's names like Tim Schaller, who, are under contract for next year, and in Sutter's case, for pretty big cake, Schaller less so he's got, 1 year left. What do they do with Marcus Granlund? I think there's a fatigue level for those level of players, those kind of like ne'er-do-well veterans that this market has watched for the last 3 years. And I just don't think they can sell another year of that. I don't. So, assuming they do land that top six guy, that kind of changes. Now you've got a whole season of Pearson and Levo, and you've got this guy. So there's three spots right there. If they trade for a defenseman, that's four. Is there anybody else who I don't see any of the prospects being ready to make a move next year?
Do you see Ioannoni here, or do you see him starting in Utica?
No, he starts in Utica. And again, you know, that's why that January 1st date is so interesting for me.
Even if he comes in a camp head and looks strong?
Oh, yeah, if he does. I just don't see coming off a knee injury and after having played 11 games the year before. I mean, I guess it could happen. I just don't see it. And I thought it was interesting, you know, Benning talking about, you know, had this season unfolded, he would have been up here for the second half of the season. Because that was the way he started in Utica, and obviously they wanted, you know.
He's just had a lot of time in Utica, and
He hasn't. I know there's been a lot of games there, but, you know, he's either injured or something happens. That's just it. So he's going to need some going to need some seasoning, and then we'll see again the second half of the season if he's ready. So I, you know, if you held a gun to my head, I would probably say five new players.
Just in the past when we've had the Young Stars tournament, which isn't there going forward, but you would see the Canucks' main roster has been so bereft of talent. You would get these grand statements like, you know, anyone who has a strong showing here and into training camp, well, there will be a spot for them if they earn it. Does it still seem a bridge too far for guys like Lind or Gajewicz or Wu?
Yeah,
like 100%. We're still like a year or half a year at least away from any of that infusion.
Yeah, that's right. There is a group of about 6 to 8, and then they're intriguing. And I think at the high end, it's Jet Wu and Tyler Madden. And then, I'm sorry, but both Lind and Gajewicz, I think the best thing you could say is they plateaued this year, didn't show a lot of improvement. And at that age, that's worrisome. But they still remain, you know, prospects. Are they suspects or prospects? I guess that will out. But the Canucks have a lot of guys there that fit into that category, like Lockwood, the defenseman from Harvard, Rathbone. Maybe they get lucky on a couple of them. And really, they're at the stage now where that's really all they need is a couple of those guys to pop. Given what they already have, it won't be next year, but again, you know, maybe the second half of the season, and then, you know, 2021, I think then we'll have a clear idea of what they have with a lot of these kids.
Now we have to wrap up, but I did want to ask you just quick thoughts on playoffs. I mean, I think that Leafs-Bruins series is going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
Yep.
Obviously Tampa looks like they're the class team to beat. I'm really intrigued by Vegas in the West, puzzled by San Jose. Love to see the Jets go in a long run. What's your thoughts of quick hits going into the playoffs?
Well, I think you could make a case for, there's 16 teams in the playoff. I think you could make a case for 10 to 12 of them winning the Stanley Cup. And I'm kind of arbitrarily throwing out the wild card teams, but virtually everybody else, there's some really good teams. I mean, I like Nashville. I probably because I have a blind spot for them, but can you really say, you know, they're the class of the West? Are they head and shoulders above Calgary, above Las Vegas, above San Jose? And you look at the other side, it's the same thing. I mean, Columbus sneaks in at the 8th spot. Look at the frickin' lineup they've got. That is a really good team. So I don't think there'll be crazy upsets, although I'm really curious about Calgary. Spoiler alert, I kind of did a little switch to Colorado in the playoff draft last year. I think there is potential there for an upset. I wouldn't call Toronto beating Boston. It's a minor upset, but it's not an earth-shaking one.
No, it isn't. But Boston have been like on this amazing run second half of the season. And it's funny, the Leafs, I was talking to Mike Trakos, our national writer, and he was saying like people are way more excited for the Raptors. People think the Leafs are done because they've known they've been playing the Bruins for so long, and they have that wonderful history, recent history with the Bruins.
And that's why I think the Leafs are capable of winning this series.
Oh, it would be
because for the first time they don't have like the weight of the entire GTA on their shoulders. And again, I look at the two lineups, and I know, you know, full credit for Boston. You know, their record speaks for itself. I just look at that Leafs lineup, and boy, if they ever get it, you know, like all concentrated and moving together in the same speed going ahead, they're going to be a handful in these playoffs.
Absolutely.
Goaltending's very important, too.
That's what I hear, and, you know, we'll get into it more. We're going to continue to do these, but that's what kills me about Calgary is best team in the West all year. Everyone's been expecting them to slip. And everyone keeps going, I don't think they have the goaltending to do it in the playoffs. I don't think they have the goaltending to stay in first place. I don't think they have the goaltending to get in the playoffs. Like, all the way through, that has been the question mark about Calgary. So it is important, and we'll see how that goes. But thanks for joining us, Ed. As ever, you can subscribe to us through Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating if you like it. And I'll just give you another reminder for our friends over at Children's Hospital. You can join Vancouver Canuck and Gene's Day Ambassador Brock Besser in supporting BC Children's Hospital. Please buy a button and Gene up in support of BC Kids on Thursday, May the 2nd. And you can get more information on that at jeansday.ca. So thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for downloading. We'll be back next week.